and welcome to the Provider Podcast, which we're bringing to you from NHS Providers' annual conference and exhibition at the ACC in Liverpool. This year's conference theme is Vital, reflecting the essential care the provider sector delivers, the commitment of staff and the importance of ensuring the health service is sustainable for the future. We're in the exhibition space, perched next to the NHS Providers' stand. And this event, like no other, draws the top tier of leaders from across the health service. It's a great opportunity for them, together with stakeholders, the media and commercial partners, to meet face to face, share lessons and experience and consider present and coming challenges. Plenty of those on the immediate horizon as we head into winter with workforce and finances under severe pressure and continuing uncertainty over industrial action, which has already been so damaging. And we've got a strong sense of what's worrying trust leaders from our State of the Provider Sector survey, which has garnered lots of media coverage, even in the midst of a cabinet reshuffle with a new Secretary of State for Health. Susan Ball is our Head of Media.
So I think it's really important to kind of flag that this survey has been, the results of the survey have shown like the build-up of pressures that have been coming over almost a decade. So things around like workforce pressures, staff shortages, the like insufficient capital investment, and that's all kind of come home to roost, I think, this winter. And the biggest pressure that we've seen is around winter. 8 in 10 trust leaders told us that they think this winter is going to be worse than last year. And that's saying something, because they thought last winter was particularly difficult. So it really does kind of hit home how tough this winter is going to be for them. They also raised concerns around social care, around staff burnout and welfare, and the morale issues that there are within the NHS workforce. And also lots of concerns raised about finances and whether they've got the capacity within their trusts to actually provide the level of care that they want to. And one of the other kind of key elements that came out through the survey was a real concern amongst our trust leaders about quality of care. I think we were all quite shocked to see over 40% of trust leaders said that they were concerned about the quality of care they were providing in their trust. I mean, obviously winter pressures, waiting lists, pressures across urgent and emergency care, they are really hitting home, and that really came through in the survey this year.
So pretty gloomy picture all told, but there were definitely sort of shards of sunlight coming through as well, weren't there, in terms of aspirations.
Absolutely.
And good work happening here and now.
Yeah, and I think it is important to, while there is that kind of sense of concern amongst trust leaders, there is also, like you said, some really good work being done. And so within the survey, they also kind of told us about the really positive work that they're doing to tackle some of the challenges that they're facing. And so some of the information that they shared with us was around the work they're doing with outreach programs to reach into ethnically diverse communities, efforts to deliver care in the right place at the right time, and also things like digital. Like, some of them told us about preoperative assessments they're doing for their patients to make sure that they're getting the care they need at the right time as well.
Yeah, now you run our media team.
Yeah.
And we know that that's a function that our members really value in terms of setting out their concerns about what's going on and really getting traction and profile for that. It's not been the easiest time, has it, in the midst of a cabinet reshuffle to really land these issues, but what sort of coverage have you managed to get?
I mean, given those caveats, Adam, I'm really thrilled with the coverage that we have got. So really strong pickup across broadcast and print media of our State Provider Sector survey. I'm really thrilled with how that went, and obviously we had Julie on the Today programme, you were on LBC talking to Nick Ferrari,
right.
We had both Julian and Saffron on Times Radio, and also Julian spoke to Kay Burley from Sky News. So that was really positive pickup, and I think some of the messages that they were trying to hit home, like you were saying around the reshuffle and what we'd like to see from the new Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, but also the fallout from last week's letter from NHS England about NHS finances. And one of the key messages that I know that you were trying to deliver yesterday, and that Saffron and Julian did too, is around kind of like the hard choices that trust leaders are having to make, and that what they're having to prioritise given the really tight financial environment that they're operating in. So they're hit with this almost triple whammy, I think, that we could almost describe it, is that they're having to manage winter, they're having to reduce waiting lists and balance the books. I mean, that's a tough task for anyone really, isn't it?
That was Susan Ball. Well, the ACC is a big venue. but there's been a really good buzz on all three floors in the various breakout rooms and partner sessions, the concourse and the auditorium. And of course here in the exhibition hall where delegates can grab a coffee, visit a stand, drop into a speaker session, or just catch up with each other. And it's a great chance to share ideas and mull over the challenges and find out what's going on across the healthcare sector. As usual, we have a strong contingent from our media partner, Health Service Journal. I'm joined now by its editor, Alistair McClellan. So Alistair McClellan, you always have a really strong contingent of reporters here at ELS. Editorially speaking, what's the value of an event such as this?
We get what we want more than anything, which is senior NHS people to talk to. So nothing beats spending time face to face with those senior figures. It's what HSJ's coverage is built on. So it's really great to have an opportunity to spend time with these people.
And I've seen you roving around having lots of chats with people. I'm going to ask for a little window into your world, Alistair, in terms of any nuggets of conversations or impressions that you've picked up here that will stay with you.
I think myself and my colleagues came to this NHS Providers Conference with one question foremost in our minds, which was, what's going to happen to the money the NHS has to spend? The NHS asked for £1 billion to cover the costs of the strike and ended up with £100 million. And a suggestion from the Treasury that they find the remaining sum from other Department of Health and Social Care budgets and from their own reserves. So myself and my colleagues have been asking Trust Chief Executives and others, well, what does that mean? And I think the most interesting thing that people have been saying to me, that they could basically see a way of getting to the end of this financial year by offering up non-recurrent savings, etc. And even if there were no further junior doctors strikes and consultant strikes, actually producing a quite a sort of, you know, and winter wasn't too bad, you know, actually driving quite hard on electives, God knows on the emergency care. But they thought, well, we're... But what they, all three of them said to me is, I'm going to end up at the start of the 24-25 financial year with an absolutely ridiculous cost improvement programme target to get myself back to, you know, break even at the end of 2025. And I think that is a real, that's very interesting that we might be doing what is common in the NHS, which is just surviving in the short term, but in the meantime creating a bigger problem in the long term. You know, Amanda was asked about, you know, are we going to put in fantasy figures? And I think, no, I think the submissions that will go in will be reasonable ones. The fantasy figures will be the ones that have to get submitted at the start of the next financial year, because they'll have such a huge gap to close because of what they're having to do over the next few months.
Yeah, and there's been a sort of gathering sense of disquiet about financial pressures that came through in our State of the Provider Sector report. In terms of a sort of broader temperature check, Alistair, you're speaking to trust leaders, system leaders all the time. What's your sense of the state of morale among NHS leaders as we head into these crucial weeks into winter with the expected challenges ahead?
Well, as Harvey Milk, I think, said, the role of a leader is to give people help, hope. You've got to give them hope. And I think the Trust Chief Executives that I talk to are very conscious of not spreading a council of despair. And amongst the people who gather at this conference, there's not much point of going, oh, it's God, it's really awful. Everybody knows it's really awful. And it is really awful. I think arguably, I mean, a lot of people would be glad to see the back of Steve Barclay, and I think the prospect of a new government cheers people up. And there's a sense that I think that maybe things can't get much worse, you know. And actually, we are seeing, for example, the elective waiting list, the growth in it is really quite small now. So people are, I wouldn't say they're upbeat, but I don't get a sense of despair. People are realistic, but hoping that things can only get better, as somebody once said.
Yeah, that does ring a bell. Alistair McClellan there from Health Service Journal. Well, the programme here has provided a place of prominence for trust leaders to offer their perspectives under the broad headings of vital for recovery, vital for improvement, and vital for reform. And one of the big themes under recovery has been about tackling health inequalities. A key speaker was Professor Kieran Patel. He's a consultant cardiologist, chief medical officer, and deputy chief executive at University Hospital Coventry and Warwickshire NHS Trust.
So, Professor Patel, you have been talking about the importance of tackling inequalities in recovery. So, recovery is a massive challenge in and of itself. Inequalities, though, that's got to be a core part of the mission.
Adam, absolutely, it has to be. I think there are two urgent reasons for this. One is that it's morally the right thing to do, and the second that it's a financially astute thing to do. But let me first talk about the moral imperative. Very early on in the pandemic, of course, we saw the pandemic shine a spotlight on health outcomes, adversely affecting those who are most impoverished and most deprived. But of course, I read a book back from the 1940s that told me that in a pandemic, more people will die from non-pandemic related issues in mental health problems. And using that data, coupled to the facts that we have a socioeconomic gradient in access to healthcare, be it elective care or urgent care, we know that health inequalities are apparent in the way that we provide services at the moment. And they would widen if we didn't pay any credence and attention to them in recovery. So we must have an approach which promotes inclusive recovery, otherwise health inequalities will widen, and it would be immoral to see those who are most deprived and most in need succumb to the adverse impact of the recovery period.
It's one thing, isn't it, identifying the challenge, which you rightly outlined there, quite another actually making headway in terms of setting about it.
Yeah, of course, and I think we're very good at spouting the high-level rhetoric about saying this is indisputably the right challenge and we must get on and do something about it. But we need tangible examples, so people need to know what we can do. So in Coventry and Warwickshire, we've identified the factors that drive health outcomes. So all of the clinical factors, coupled to those, some of the operational factors and the factors that show that there are inequalities. We've bundled those into a software tool and an algorithm. So every day we make sure that patients receive not only constitutional standards and clinical prioritisation, but we make the best use of our resource in healthcare provision so that the patients most in need get the healthcare that we're providing. And every day our waiting list is rejigged so that we provide care to those most in need. And that means we don't just focus based upon waiting times alone, but we drive in a whole heap of other factors to schedule healthcare and reduce health inequality.
And you've been here sharing the benefit of your experience as you've set about that. And in terms of the conversations you've had here and the session you've been involved with, has there also been an element of learning about what others have been doing as well?
Yeah, and I think the beauty of conferences like this is that we start to become learning health systems, don't we? We share the experiences that we each have, so I've talked about what we're doing in Coventry. I've learned from colleagues in Yorkshire and colleagues in London and South Maudsley about what they're doing. And I think together we can make the NHS a better place, but actually we can start to make traction and deliver some tangible examples of what we can do to promote inclusive recovery.
Professor Kieran Patel, so as I was saying earlier, this event is a great opportunity to come together and find out what's going on across the healthcare sector, including the work of commercial partners who are working in various ways to support and engage with the activities of the NHS. Let's get a flavour of what they have to say about this week's events.
I'm Mark Hutchinson. I'm the Vice President within Altera in the UK. We're really pleased to be at this NHS Providers event because for Altera UK, we provide electronic patient record systems to the NHS. and to secondary care hospitals, and this is a great opportunity to meet with key decision makers, people in your organisation, chief executives from across health, as well as other suppliers, and be part of the debate, be part of the conversations that are going on in the hall as well as in the auditorium, but great opportunity for us just to connect with the loads of really important people in the NHS in one place.
I'm Jill Baker, and I'm a business development manager with Hempsons, and one of my responsibilities is managing the relationship we have with NHS providers. Yeah, the event itself is an important event for us because, you know, we've got the senior decision makers, haven't we, at an event like this. We have some really good conversations with the people visiting the stand. We get to know clients better through the event, and then we get to know new people. And we work with NHS providers on a sort of programme of activities, often that culminates in the sessions that we then present at the conference.
Ben Garside, I'm a partner with Newton in our health and integration practice. It's a real privilege to be with NHS providers at a time when we know that health and care leaders are facing unprecedented challenges. It's a really unique ability for NHS providers to bring and convene leaders across the system together. And it's a real privilege to spend time with those people, share some of the impact that we've had in our programmes up and down the country working with health leaders, but also a massive opportunity to learn from the breadth of, and expertise and work and endeavour that's happening right across the country for patients and for staff.
Some of the impressions there of commercial partners at this annual conference and exhibition in Liverpool. On now to Sir Julian Hartley, Chief Executive at NHS Providers. What have been his main impressions of the events of the last couple of days?
It's been fantastic. It's been a really energising and confidence-building couple of days, I think, for NHS leaders, given the scale of the challenges that everyone is facing. And I think we've had a really clear and honest balance of those challenges, centering on industrial action, of course, winter, finances, workforce. But nevertheless, there have been so many great examples of the work of our members in their own organisations, in trusts, across systems. And I think listening to those and sharing those, our members have really departed with a spring in their step. I've spoken to quite a lot of delegates who've said exactly that. And I think it's a unique opportunity, isn't it, in the NHS calendar to bring together leaders from trusts at such levels of sort of seniority and impact and influence, but to spend that quality time together to reflect and recharge. And that's exactly how it's felt. And I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear, and as we've been discovering, you know, what members get out of this event, which after all is the fundamental purpose of it. But as Chief Executive of NHS Providers, what do you get out of being here and talking to colleagues?
I get a huge amount out of it. First and foremost, a sense of just how great the NHS Providers team is in terms of pulling all this together. It is a logistical, organisational, presentational challenge that is pretty enormous, and to see the skill and alacrity with which colleagues have gone about it is brilliant. So I'm really proud of the team. I also feel a great sense of support for the work we do, and I was really pleased by the reception from my opening speech about the importance of equality, diversity and inclusion, about the importance of the role of leaders as dealers in hope, as well as the challenges that we're facing, and the sharing of the good practice that we get from visiting our members. And, you know, Adam, you've been with me on a number of visits. It's great, isn't it, just to see the way in which our members are responding to those challenges. And this for me, is energising, and it gives me, having led, obviously, several NHS trusts, but it gives me renewed hope and confidence in the future of the NHS and those that serve in it.
And Julian, reflecting back on the last couple of days, what are the very best bits for you?
Well, I think the best bits for me were actually the chance to just walk around the whole of the annual conference and exhibition. You know, there aren't many times when you get the opportunities to have such brilliant networking and to renew old acquaintances, to forge new connections, and to connect members with one another and with our exhibitors, our sponsors. And it's great to come together in a spirit of learning, companionship, and support. And that, I think, captures the sort of essence of what we're doing. I also loved the panel sessions on the main stage. I thought that we had great speakers. It would be invidious to single any of them out, but I think if you put them all together, what a rich feast of stimulation, input, challenge, and inspiration. So those would be my main takeaways.
That was Sir Julian Hartley, Chief Executive of NHS Providers. So what about the wider perceptions of the NHS as we move into a pre-election and then very possibly soon an election period? We've been talking to Anna Quigley, who's been one of the presenters at a key plenary session at the annual conference and exhibition. I asked Anna about the state of public support and confidence in the NHS.
I think it depends on whether you're asking about confidence in the quality of care or confidence that they will be treated quickly, for example. Because at the moment, we know that patient satisfaction is lower than it has been in previous years, but that is largely to do with access. So people are genuinely worried about how quickly they'd be able to access care if they needed it tomorrow. But they are very confident in the quality of the care that they'd get if once they get in and see that healthcare professional. In all of the surveys that we conduct at the moment, we're still seeing really, really high ratings of those interactions between the patient and the healthcare professional. So it's a bit of a mixed picture, I'd say.
Are you getting any impression of how people feel about the future of the NHS?
Yeah, I do think that there is some real concern. So what we are seeing is people think that the standard of care has got worse over the last 12 months, but we're seeing almost as many people say that they think it will get worse in the next 12 months. And that figure has been increasing over the last couple of years. So we are getting to a point where that concern is growing and growing every year. When we talk to people qualitatively about the future of the NHS, they really do worry that it just won't exist in the form that they've known all their lives and their family have known, and they're worried that that won't be there for their children. They're worried that it can't continue, that waiting lists will get longer, and actually it just won't be able to do what it's done in the past.
So there's real worry there about the performance, the future performance of the NHS. How about that sense of loyalty to the idea of the NHS and its founding principles?
Yeah, despite this really high level of dissatisfaction that we're picking up, we're also seeing that matched with absolute commitment to the founding principles of the NHS. That hasn't gone away. We still know that the public are really bought into the idea of the NHS. They really support the founding principles of it, and they want to see it continue. It's something that they still remain proud of, and they want the NHS as it is at the moment, the sort of the fundamentals, so those founding principles, absolutely they want that to continue, but they are worried about what that might look like in the future.
Anna Quigley from Ipsos there, finishing off this edition of the Provider Podcast from NHS Providers Annual Conference and Exhibition in Liverpool. Thank you for joining us. We have had an amazing week, and I hope you've got a strong sense of the activities and the real value that people have gained out of being here at this event. A reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.